Now, if you're a regular, you know that this time is a particularly special time on a Wednesday morning, and that is because it is time for our dose of Dictionary of Sydney. I'm joined by Rachel from the Dictionary of Sydney team. Good morning.
Hello, Marlene. How are you going?
I'm very good, and it's a pleasure to be able to chat with you. I've been speaking with the team early about how I'm usually the host of The Daily on Wednesday, and I always tune in to Dictionary of Sydney, so it's nice to be on this side.
It's good to be here, and I've got something a little bit different for you this morning. So I normally bring a crime story to you and your listeners at 2SER, but I normally bring axe murderers or something really terrible from colonial Sydney. So today I have a spade murder instead.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
So on the 7th of May, 1832, a man by the name of John Hamill was hanged for murder. So this week is the anniversary of his execution. Now, he'd bumped off his boss, a guy by the name of George Williamson. Now, not everybody was actually sorry Williamson had been bashed in the head with a spade, but committing murder then as now has its consequences. So he had to be punished, at least in some form, for what he'd done. So he'd actually attacked his boss at Gross Farm. He was part of a convict work gang. So that's the site of Camperdown's University of Sydney campus.
All right.
So it's very close to where we are. And Williamson was the overseer of this gang. But the day before he was killed, many members of the gang complained to him that their accommodation was really not fit to live in. Now, this wasn't a minor complaint about, you know, a routine plumbing issue or, oh, there's a small leak in the roof. There was actually a stream running through the room. And the men were convicts, but they worked hard and they believed that they were right in requesting different quarters. Now, Williamson refused, and he took it so far that he would later frighten the men away from a fire where they were trying to dry out their clothes because they'd slept in mud all night and they were trying to prepare for a new day at work. Now, Hamill was quite senior in the gang and he was instructed to go and cut a new drain, and Williamson told him to cut it in a peculiar way, but he did what he was told, and it was only when Williamson found fault with his work and said that he'd done the drain wrong that Hamill became enraged. And he lifted the spade that he was working with and he struck the deceased on the head, inflicting the wound of which he afterwards died.
My goodness.
So it's quite a sort of, not quite a traditional crime of passion, but certainly one of spontaneous rage, of, you know, lots of mistreatments building up into a single, quite dramatic retaliation. Now, they have a coronial inquiry and Hamill is ordered to stand trial for murder. And he does try and initially resist arrest. He threatens his fellow labourers. He thinks, he knows he's in trouble, but he eventually succumbs and he's taken into custody. He goes through the coronial inquiry and then he needs to go through a trial as well. And throughout both of these processes, it's really proven that Williamson was just not a bloke you wanted to work for. He was well known as being a vindictive tyrant and for deliberately finding ways to torment and make life difficult for the men that were working for him. And, you know, like, they're convicts, so they're not good in great conditions anyway, but he really went out of his way to make those conditions as subhuman as he possibly could. But the real problem for Hamill was that it was only 1832. So in Sydney, in New South Wales, before 1840, you only had legal representation at a trial if you had the money to pay for it.
All right.
So he goes in without a defence and he shows that without living, about the living conditions on the farm that they were so bad that he actually begged to be locked up in the cells until morning because it was going to be more comfortable in jail than in his worker's hut. He also showed that Williams. He also showed that Williamson actually provoked him, and so he was the one that initiated the physical aggression by pushing him first. Now, the judge actually saw both sides. Obviously, the judge can't go around and say, oh, yes, murder is a good solution for any workplace dispute. But he did see that Hamill had been wronged, and wronged over a period of time. So he actually instructed the jury that if they believed the prisoner had been assaulted by the deceased, that they could come back and give a verdict of manslaughter instead of murder. So that was Justice James Dowling. But unfortunately, he was put into a bit of a tight spot because the jury spent a whole 15 minutes deliberating, and they came back and they said, no, it was a case of willful murder. Probably a bit of stereotyping. You know, he's a convict. He's just a bad guy doing bad stuff. So he deserves the ultimate punishment. And so the judge then really had no choice but to issue a death sentence. And so he's hanged. But the papers, even in what's still a fairly conservative town, are really outraged that he's hanged and the hanging is botched. It takes him quite a bit of time to die. And people are really quite clear and quite scathing and sort of saying that had the prisoner been rich, he would have had a counsel, and that the counsel would have been able to better argue the case for manslaughter instead of murder.
Wow. So Williamson kind of got off scot-free there.
Well, I mean, he at least dies quickly as the murder victim. He doesn't have the really prolonged death that Hamill has for murdering him. So hangings in early colonial Sydney were not always very neat events. The equipment wasn't that great. The understanding of the science was still being developed. And, you know, the hangmen were not always the most reliable men on the sheriff's books. So in the end, it was, you know, it's a really unhappy story for everybody. But sort of I think it's a really important history because it reminds us of, you know, we've seen so much television now, right, about, you know, lawyering up and, you know, I want to speak to somebody and all this sort of thing. And it's just so instinctive and we take it for granted. But really, we didn't have that right until 1840, which in the great scheme of things is not that long ago.
No, not at all. And sorry, I didn't mean Williamson. I meant his boss. What happened to his boss?
Oh, so Williamson was the boss, so he's leading this gang out at Gross Farm, and Hamill was one of the members of the gang. So whoever was working, whoever was supervising Williamson, that's an interesting point. So I'm not quite sure who that was, but he was obviously, you're quite right, he's allowing these hideous conditions to unfold on his watch and really not intervening, whether that was a deliberate, I don't really care, or whether he actually wasn't paying attention and wasn't really looking at what was going on that farm.
Yeah, you're definitely right. We definitely, I guess, we don't think about how we take that right to have a defence or counsel as much. So stories like this, when you bring them up, it really puts it into perspective. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you, Rachel, so much for joining us.
Thanks, Marlene.